Welcome to Advertising Week Europe 2024 in audio, powered by The Barbershop. In this podcast, we'll bring you the latest insights and trends from industry leaders in advertising and marketing. Join us as we dive into discussions that shape the future of our industry.
Thanks, everybody. Thanks for joining us today. Really pleased to see such a full room. Still people coming in, but we'll wait for them to come in and grab some seats and stuff. So welcome to the future of digital branded content. We'll start by just giving you guys a little bit of an intro into what we're here to talk about. Really, the branded content itself on digital has probably been around for about 10 years. I think the inception really from video social branded content started with the likes of Lab Bible and Unilab back in the day, and it's really kind of developed and moved on over those 10 years. So we're here to talk about, you know, that was then, that was the history, but what does it look like moving forward? So on the panel, I'd just like to introduce, let the guys introduce themselves. So Jordan, I'm seeing
everyone. So my name is Jordan, co-founder of Arcade Media, and I manage the Sidemen.
Hi, I'm Rupert. I'm head of creative strategy at Publicis Media. I work within the content team over at Publicis, so we work quite closely with the media agencies to integrate our clients into branded content, but we also do sponsorships as well.
Hiya folks, I'm LA Ronayne. I am Executive Creative Director at Lad Bible Group. I head up everything from conceptual creative through to production for all things branded content.
Great, thanks guys. That's loud over there, isn't it? I can really hear that on the stage. Hopefully you can hear us over there. We'll obviously be a lot more interesting. Right, so first question to you all is just going to go straight in. What makes a good piece of digital branded content?
Yeah, I mean, so I think for me, a good piece of branded content is when the brand, nowadays anyway, is giving creativity as much as they can over to creators who are validating what they do every day by testing, learning, knowing what's performing well, knowing what's not performing well, and are putting it to practice constantly. I think when you see bad branded content, you can often see an overreach in terms of the creative coming from the brand versus the person they're trying to work with or the publisher. And I think that went from when I was back at Lab Bible, same thing. The more trust that the brands gave over to the creative partner, the better, the more brands got involved, the worse the content always was. So I think the less brands get involved creatively and the more they hand it over, the better, in my head. What do you think?
Yeah,
it's a brand hat.
So I think, I mean, good branded content has to satisfy two parties. So it has to, on the first hand, it has to be content that genuinely interests the audience that it was designed for, created for. So I totally agree with that. But it also has to deliver the outcomes that the brand who's actually paying for that content wants to see from it. So that might be generating awareness, it might be driving brand consideration, shifting brand perception, sometimes even driving commerce directly. So I think it's about mediating between what the brand wants and what the audience wants, and that's kind of really what we have to do within our industry.
I feel like I should be sitting in the middle. I'm going to go ahead and say, for me, it's all about really unexpected creative ideas that are generated by insights based on the audience. You have to really understand who you're speaking to connect with them in a way that's culturally relevant. And there's loads of different ways that you can do that, but it's essential to sort of understand the audience and what makes them, you know, what they're into, what makes them excited, and then going in and cutting through the noise and doing something that feels big and interesting and really creative.
Yeah, I think that's it. I think a good piece of branded content strikes the balance between whether it's creator or if it's publisher, media owner, and the brand and what they're looking to do and what they're looking to achieve. A bad piece is when it probably goes too far one way or the other, isn't it? And I think we've probably all been there and seen instances of all of that stuff. But Rupert, starting with you next, because it leads nicely onto what are brands looking for when they're looking to do a piece of digital branded content, a series, as a one-off? What is it that brands are looking for?
It really depends what's in our brief. So all our work is answering a brief that we're given.
Yeah.
So say it might be like generating awareness, or it might be shifting brand perception. I think what we're looking for is the creation of an asset which we're not reliant upon paid for media to create the appeal. So by this, I mean that I think there's often a danger that we can almost hide behind a content amplification plan, for example. If we're just like forcing people to watch content, then there's no real difference from interruptive advertising. Mm. It's about creating something that creates that genuine appeal. You're asking for someone's time to watch your content or engage with the content or play with the content in gaming, for example. So you have to give them something back.
Yeah. LA, what do you think? From the other side, what do you think brands, what are Lab Bible looking for? Or what do they think the brands are looking for?
I think it's about moving at the speed of social and doing that in a sort of in a consistent way. Obviously, Lab Bible Group is well established in this space, and you know, it's one of the biggest youth publishers in the world now. We really fully, like I was saying before, understand the audience. That means that we get to offer brands that insight and that intel to really help with them on a strategic level, more and more so, to make sure that we're, you know, developing work that will cut through and gain traction. And really, that's about having deep knowledge of the algorithms and how that works, working closely with creators in the right and correct and relevant ways, redefining, I guess, new spaces and new offerings for client solutions, really. And just keeping that up and never taking the sort of eye off the weather storm.
And Jordan, same question to you. Obviously, creators working with brands is nothing new, but how do they approach it? How important is it to, you know, hit the brand objectives when they're doing?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is the gap. We were obviously just talking about this, right? I think there is a bit of a gap between creators understanding the kind of corporate needs of the brand and then the brand trusting the creator. And there is an opportunity there, I think, to bridge that relationship. I think in terms of what brands want, it's hopefully about especially when working with the Sidemen or anyone like them, it's knowing that they're accessing their voice, their audience, but it's allowing them, as I was saying before, the kind of freedom to do it. And the best relationships are the ones where there is that kind of trust both ways, where you know that the creator is going to go above and beyond to try and deliver as much value as they can for the brand in terms of conversions, awareness, whatever the objectives are. But at the same time, there's that trust creatively that they're going to do it in a way that's real to them, because there's nothing worse than a hashtag and a terrible piece of branded content that everyone swipes past and no one actually engages with. So it's about, as you say, striking that happy medium.
Yeah, completely agree. LA, Lab Bible, Unilad, they've been around for a long time. Their businesses were both built before they became one business, now the biggest youth publisher in the world. Their offering was built from social branded content. Back in the, I don't know if some people here will probably remember this, 2015 Facebook days of UGC content, turning that, which is what audiences were engaging with at that time, into what brands were, you know, wanting to spend on at the time, because that was what was reaching, in some instances, tens of millions of people. How have Lab Bible developed over that time, do you think? And what do you think, you know, how will they continue to build on that success?
I think, you know, there's always been a real respect of the audience and the channels as it's evolved and grown. And of course, the whole group, and most recently with our acquisition of Betches, out of America, which is massively exciting. We've always been looking to see, certainly from a brand point of view, how we can grow different voices and represent different members of the youth audience, not just here, but across the pond around the world as well. And like I kind of mentioned before, that's always been about sort of understanding the algorithms and the channels, but not being sort of beholden to them. So working really closely with them, but more sort of doing it on behalf of the audience as the sort of best mate of the internet for these guys. And I think in terms of the future, that's just about, as more and more brands are kind of going, right, I don't want to just do one little kind of sort of small campaign, thinking about it in the longer term, thinking about it in I guess like traditional media mindsets into the new system that can just it can grow and shape and develop in whatever way we need it to offer our brands.
Okay. And just picking up on what you said about the platforms, are there any that you guys gravitate more towards that are a better place for distribution of branded content than others?
I think all of them have different benefits and different sort of use cases. Mm-hmm. Like TikTok didn't really exist for us a couple of years ago, and now it's like a huge, it's such an enormous driver for, you know, for certain things that we're talking about, for certain brands as well. To me, I think it's like the sort of bigger ambition or strategy or idea that solves a brand problem, and then working with the right people to bring it to life in the right media mix.
Yeah.
So that's across all of the channels, but also within our sort of brand matrix of the different offerings that we have, from LAD to UniLAD to Sport, networking, you know, closer with our brands in the States as well. Female focus, like on Tyler there as well. It's really, yeah, like I say, solving that big creative opportunity, and then like doing the right media for it.
Yeah. Roop, I'm going to go to you for the same question, actually. Are you looking at specific platforms when you're working on briefs on behalf of your clients?
I mean, I'd say, like, when we're talking about digital branded content, socials on every single plan, and in terms of platforms, as usual, it's like TikTok, Instagram. Mm-hmm. I mean, you'd probably go more TikTok if it's a younger audience. I mean, more increasingly, we're trying to go into gaming spaces, mm-hmm. because those are social environments too. You know, Roblox, Fortnite.
Yeah.
In fact, I think some of the best branded content I've seen recently is in those virtual world spaces.
Yeah.
But again, it's the same thing. It's the same principle. It's about giving that audience something back to warrant them investing their time in your content. So, you know, it might be like Frank's Hot Sauce creating a mini game in Fortnite where you can throw chickens into hot lava, or like we did a Visa pop-up store in Roblox where we created these quite cool retro outfits which you could just dress up your avatar with. Really cheap, simple, but just did incredibly well in terms of the brand appeal and generating that awareness for that younger audience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, great. And with the platforms now vocally, very publicly moving towards prioritizing creator content over your more traditional, especially broadcaster content and other publisher content, how are the creators navigating that at the moment?
Yeah, well, I think it's a golden, well, two things. One, I think it's a golden era, obviously, for distribution and creators, whoever you are, anyone in this room might be able to put up a video and probably 10 of us going viral, right? That's the opportunity that's at hand. But on the other hand, I think brands now control so much of the economy. And we know this from, I mean, they are the economy, really, right? And I think we know this from just looking at sort of smaller creators. The rates now that you're starting to see on the micro level is staggering. Like, we actually own, obviously, a number of brands. We have a fried chicken restaurant, vodka brand, and breakfast brand. And we're now distributing with creators on a smaller scale. And you see that the hustle has just gone up tenfold, because the amount of creators out there now with audience, with the ability to connect, is so much bigger than it ever was. So I think that's a golden opportunity for brands. It's actually a quite difficult opportunity for creators. And I think it's one of the hardest environments to be a creator today. Like, do I look at someone like the Sidemen and say that can happen again? I actually don't know if it can. I don't probably think it will, because the way the connection has shifted. So I think, yeah, creators having to hustle tenfold. Brands are obviously living the good life because they can buy videos for £500, £300 now. But what it does mean is competition's up. You're going to have to do a lot more, I think, to have a career than branded content as a creator. And I think relying on brands for your income is the first mistake. It needs to be a gateway to then unlocking direct revenue that you actually own. Because if you're relying on brands, I think it's a race to the bottom in many ways.
Yeah. Rupert, what would you say in terms of your approach as an agency representing a number of big blue chip brands and their way of working, what they're looking for from the creators these days?
I think we're at quite an interesting junction at the moment with digital content. I mean, on the one hand, you've got like creators producing almost TV like formatted content released episodically. Mm-hmm. You know, Sidemen's a great example of this. And with like huge audiences. So I think this is something you provide me with, Matt. But, you know, Sidemen in 2023 had more people watching their content than all seasons of The Crown and Stranger Things on Netflix.
Yeah.
And I think once we start getting AI, I've got to mention AI.
Yeah. the gong.
And it's democratizing power in terms of increasing the production values of content, mm-hmm. and making it more affordable. Then you've got that layered onto creator-led content, and it will become more TV-like.
Yeah, indeed.
With big audiences.
You're seeing that shift anyway with the YouTube viewership. and where the majority of that now comes from is on the big screen. It is TV, isn't it? And now YouTube have introduced an ad buy, which is purely CTV ad buying as well. So they've taken advantage of that, which is putting that proposition directly against linear broadcast,
yeah,
but at effectively what are social ad rates. So,
yeah, I mean, 70% of homes now have connected TVs. Mm-hmm. Viewership of YouTube on connected TVs is now just about to overtake, you know, on mobile and, yeah, and desktop. So it's all merging on that big TV. Yeah.
LabWire will have their own creator network. How much does that feature in your branded content responses? Where does that fit within your model?
Yeah, I mean, heavily yeah, across the board. It's all about the correct casting for, yeah, the right brands. And, you know, as we say, it's about using people to the best of their abilities in a really authentic way and having great briefing sessions and working really closely. So it's not like, here's a television script, can you read it out? Yeah. Like all of the original content that we produce. The same rules apply from everything from like originals to Snack Wars, all the way through to our branded content. It's, mm-hmm, about doing things that we know will resonate in the best way and have a sort of very authentic delivery to them, if that makes sense. I think with our creator network, the way that sort of build that up or connect with people is really important as well. Because like you say, there's so many people out there and it's about finding the correct talent and the best talent for a sort of an opportunity or a creative ask in the, yeah, brand worlds.
And are you casting them in Lab Bible series, branded content series? Are you leaving them to do it themselves on their own?
So we use LCN specifically, the Live Creator Network, I beg your pardon. We use those guys specifically to work on our brand side of stuff. So everything that I'd head up with my team,
yeah,
would be about working with those people to do brand messages stuff. But I mean more that the rules and what makes our great original series so strong and so viewed, we really take those learnings and apply to how we create brand content with creators also.
Yeah, yeah. Great. One thing I forgot to mention at the top was if you've got any questions, please put them on the Slido, and if we've got time, which we might have looking at the clock, then we'll hopefully get to them. So next question, which is I think the point of this whole session and the name of this session in terms of the future of branded content: what does 2024 look like for digital branded content? And it'd be great to get all of your insight into that.
Yeah, so what does 2024 look like? So I think increasingly it's brands building better in-house teams that can actually be quicker to market with ideas. I think one of the biggest challenges historically in this pivot to TikTok is brands have just been caught up. The ones who are fast do well, the ones who are slow just seem to really, really struggle. And often that's about having layers in between them, whether it's agencies or whoever else. So I think more brands bringing content in-house to execute on social, produce better organic branded content. And then I think it's sponsoring and funding smaller creators who have the ability to test and learn constantly, to see what works, to see what doesn't, and to almost guarantee better results. In my head, though, what this does mean is for people like the Sidemen and others, it is actually a pretty precarious position for brands, because brands have stopped spending that at that bigger level for individual creators in the same way. So we have to get more inventive. Now brands go, well, why would I spend $100,000 on a Sidemen video necessarily when I could spend, you know, 100 creators £1,000? It just makes no sense in the current space. So I think it's more of that, more smaller micro creator spend, less bigger individual creator spend, unless, as we're trying to do increasingly, you're providing bigger and bullshit activations, things like our Revolut campaign and others. So yeah, I think that's how it's going to go: better in-housing and then more sort of micro influencers, less sort of big ticket influencer spend is my prediction.
I think a 100 creators on a plan would be a project management nightmare.
It would be
compared, yeah, to just having one.
Yeah.
But that would be your problem.
The game,
wouldn't
it? Yeah.
That would be your team doing that. What do you think?
I'd rather do fewer and bigger.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I sort of mentioned like collaborating with creators to create, yeah, more sort of like TV light. I don't want to say TV light, but basically if you collaborate with a creator, you can do far more as a brand than if, say, I was to make some social content with a broadcaster, particularly if they can keep hiding behind Ofcom or commissioning editors and pushing back on ideas which either the brand or their agency has come to them with. So I think there's that. But I also think that there's some interesting things happening with content linking to commerce. Mm-hmm. So with TikTok Shop, mm-hmm. the popularity of live stream shopping. Now, I think when you're developing a branded content idea, it's always start then exploring about, is there a direct commerce opportunity behind it? And then, of course, you've got Amazon. I don't think they've done this yet, but linking brand-funded entertainment on Prime to Amazon retail, and whether we're going to start seeing that open up, I'm not sure. Yeah. I'm sure it's going to happen soon, though.
You'd think so. You'd think that'd be on their roadmap soon. If not, they should probably do it. If there's anyone from Amazon in the room.
I've done it.
You've done it. There you go.
It is. Yeah.
Of applause. LA, what do you think? What do you think the future holds?
I mean, trends-wise in this year, I don't like macro or micro trends just move so quickly that you just kind of need to sort of let it be and do its thing.
Yeah.
But what I have seen a lot more of, even in my time of that, which hasn't been that long, I've only been there since September last year, has been the increase in serious brand considerations, serious brand partnerships coming in, not just talking about like a couple of weeks, but like, what does a year mean? What does 2 years mean? Mm-hmm. How can we like bake our social prowess and our social knowledge into their actual brand strategy, and that's like all different sectors of brands has been like amazing and such a brilliant challenge to kind of take it from the very top and then look about that in the sort of a future way. So I've definitely seen a lot more of that happening at LAD, which is brilliant. And then I think in terms of the audience, you know, everyone's grown up with the phone in their hand. They know all the channels. They know when something is branded. They don't mind it as long as it's done in a certain way. And to me, and you know, the results that we see, that has to be pure play entertainment. Like, it has to be really fun and engaging and simple, or it has to really stand for what the youth audience care about in their actual communities and the actual causes that they mm-hmm. like. And I think brands really need to understand that and sort of get into it to be a part of that that cultural relevance curve.
Okay. This is the final question before we go to questions from the audience. Please keep them coming. For the brands in the room, those who are, you know, looking at investing in this space or contemplating investing in this space, why should they do it? Jordan, I'll come to you first.
Why should brands invest in space? I think, look, there's a massive opportunity in leveraging the audiences of others. And because audiences are being built each and every day at such a pace, as we see, the curve of relevance as a creator now is as up and down as it's ever been. I think it's a massive opportunity for brands. As I said, brands are winning right now. They control everything. So if you are a brand in the room, it's like, now's the golden age to be experimenting, to be taking as many risks as possible, working with as many different creators as possible, testing different creatives, using what works, and then taking that on to another level. It's a constant game of testing and learning now. And so if you have the capital to invest in it, it's the best way to, as I say, leverage other audiences and get scale. It's a no-brainer right now for brands.
Great, thanks. Rupert, what would you say? I mean, you're telling them all the time, so.
part of it is about like getting around ad avoidance and to be in these spaces where people are actually almost expecting brands to be as well.
Yeah.
By providing content, you've got more of an opportunity, I think, for storytelling. So you can have a richer or deep message that you can do through content. I think the other way of looking at content is the fact that chances are you're probably not going to be doing it by yourself. You're probably going to be doing it with a creator or a publisher or a trusted media brand. So there's some sharing of brand equity that you can take from that partnership, which will have benefits. I think those are probably the key things that, I mean, the other reason why people get in branding content is the fact that sometimes they might not have the budgets to create big glossy advertising.
Yep.
So there might be a financial reason. I don't really want to say that because this should be more of a positive reason for doing it, but that is definitely at play.
Yeah, great. Thank you. LA, over to you.
I honestly think it's just the most fun that you can have as a brand right now. And especially if you're hungry to make work and to move quickly and to be a part of you know, the proper social entertainment space. It's it's a best way to activate and to move quickly and to not kind of plan things, to test and learn, to lean on the teams that we have at places like that. Simon, all of us up here on the stage can like help to do that. And it's the most gratifying thing to get that sort of instant response from the audience as well.
Yeah. Well, that's it. You can't you? You can get that instant response. And from that, it's immensely measurable. You can't hide behind it because it's there in front of you. You can see that. You can see from the comments, from the engagement. You can see how many views have been bought versus how many organically earned on that content as well. I mean, you can't hide from the metrics. So when you're creating that stuff, you have to be able to deliver it. Otherwise, it's not like other mediums, is it? You can't see the numbers on other mediums, but you can on social branded content. So measurement is real. Right, I'm going to go to Slido while we've got a couple minutes left. Question. How do we navigate the potential issues around trust and brand safe environments within the creator world and outlets like Lad Bible? I'm going to assume that's come from a traditional media owner. Brand safety, I think. How do you navigate brand safety as a creator?
I think it's one of those things, right? It's like if you want high rewards, you've got to take risks. And I think now, especially, it's very difficult to fully control that. It's almost impossible. People are fallible. People are risky by default. And those who are entertaining often do sometimes come up with riskier content. I think as brands, it's about picking the people who most align with your values, most align with you as a brand, finding those fits of true advocacy, and then accepting that if you want to win big, you're going to have to take risks. And that sometimes means giving the keys over to people who can do things slightly differently. That's where you're going to get the biggest upshoots. Mm-hmm. And then I think also that's why the influencer marketing side is just popping off on a micro level so well, because there is a level of distance between you sponsoring a TikTok creator making a video on their channel and you working on that kind of deeper partnership, which maybe would have been in the publisher style. Like that is a bit of distance that maybe helps with risk potentially.
Agreed.
What do you think?
Well, some of our clients will often request that they have the option to remove comments from content, which I know can be problematic with creators. I think it's I've seen partnerships fall down for that reason. So there are certain clients that insist upon it. So I think, again, it's really just about on a case-by-case basis with the client and risk assessing everything as we go through the campaign.
Yeah. 100%. We take risk assessment from the very get-go. If anything feels like it's even going to be a little bit controversial, whatever else, we've got a whole scoring system for how that works. And then we've got an entire duty of care for our creators or for anyone who appears in our content or around it as well.
Yeah. Okay.
Take it very seriously.
Very seriously. I mean, the brand safety question has been around since the inception of this industry anyway. It's nothing new. When, early days of Unilad Lad Bible, it was around the type of content they were posting and also the names of the companies. Got Bible in it, you've got Lad in it. It became an excuse, in my opinion. I think that the braver that the brands became, because the audience speaks for itself, and the fact that if you want to reach those audiences, go where they are to the content they're consuming, which then was the content they were consuming. It still is, but obviously now it's creators as well. So there's an element of risk that comes with it, I think, and you have to be brave. That's it. That's time up. I think that's we'll end it there. Just say thanks everybody for joining us. Thanks to you guys for coming to listen. Have a great digital.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Advertising Week Europe 2024 in audio. Stay connected with us on social media using the handle @advertisingweek and visit our website europe.advertisingweek.com for more exclusive content. This podcast was produced by Podcander, the audio conference solution.